General Hygiene, 1890. Labor a blessing. In creating man, God designed that he should be active and useful. Adam and Eve were placed in paradise and surrounded with everything that was pleasant to the eye or good for food. A beautiful garden was planted for them in Eden. In it were stately trees of every description, all that could serve for use or ornament. Flowers of rare loveliness and of every tint and hue perfumed the air. Merry songsters of varied plumage caroled joyous songs in praise of their creator. Paradise delighted the senses of the holy pair, but this was not enough. They must have something to call into play the wonderful human organism. He who formed man knew what would be for his good, and had happiness consisted in doing nothing, man, in his state of holy innocence, would have been left unemployed. But no sooner was he created than God appointed him his work. He was to find employment and happiness in tending the things which God had created, and his wants were to be abundantly supplied from the fruits of the garden. Work of brain and muscle is beneficial. Each faculty of the mind and each muscle has its distinctive office, and all require exercise to develop them and give them healthful vigor. Each wheel in the living mechanism must be brought into use. The whole organism needs to be constantly exercised in order to be efficient and meet the object of its creation. God has given us precious talents of mental and physical capabilities, and he holds us responsible for the use we make of every one of these powers. It is our duty to so educate the mind that all its faculties shall be developed. Perception, judgment, memory, and the reasoning powers should have equal strength in order that the mind may be well balanced. To some have been given great abilities and excellent opportunities of development, and of them the more is required. The heaviest responsibilities in the world's work rest upon them, but all have powers of mind which should be used to the glory of God. And everyone who does his work conscientiously and well, whether in the shop, the field, or the pulpit, will be rewarded according to the spirit in which he has worked. Another precious talent which has been entrusted to men is their capital of strength. This is of more value than any bank deposit, and should be more highly prized, for in the possibilities that it affords for leading a useful, happy life, it may be made to yield interest and compound interest. It is a blessing that cannot be purchased with gold or silver, houses or land, and God requires that it be used judiciously. No man has a right to sacrifice this precious talent to the corroding influence of inaction. All are as accountable for their capital of physical strength as for the capital of money. Riches and idleness are thought by some to be blessings indeed. But those who are in possession of wealth and leisure, and yet have no purpose in life, are not the most happy. They have little to arouse them to either mental or physical activity, and often their life seems little more than mere existence. Scarcely an instance of disinterested benevolence brightens the life record of many persons. No pleasant memory survives them at their death, for there was no true goodness to leave a loving impress, even on the hearts of their friends. Such a life is a sad failure. It is the life of an unfaithful steward who forgets that his Creator has claims upon him. Selfish interests attract his mind and lead to forgetfulness of God and of his purpose in the creation of man. Through lack of mental stimulus and physical exertion, many a woman loses her health and is driven to seek some medical institution for treatment. Here, attendants are hired, at great expense, to rub, stretch, and exercise the muscles, which, through inaction, have become powerless. She hires servants that she may live a life of idleness, and then hires other servants to exercise the muscles enfeebled by disuse. What consummate folly! How much wiser and better for women, young or old, to brave the sneers of fashion's votaries and obey the dictates of common sense and the laws of life. By the cheerful performance of domestic or other duties, the idle daughters of wealth might become useful and happy members of society. For many, such labor is a more effective and profitable movement cure than the best inventions of the physicians. Young men, as well as young women, often manifest a sad lack of earnest purpose and moral independence. To dress, to smoke, to talk nonsense, and to indulge their passion for amusement is the ideal of happiness, even with many who profess to be Christians. They shirk their share of the duties of life, and the indolence of the many occasions, the overwork of the few. It is painful to think of the time thus misspent. Hours that should have been given to the study of the Scriptures or to active labor for Christ are worse than wasted. Life was given for a true and holy purpose. It is too precious to be thus squandered. I entreat you who have taken the name of Christ, examine your hearts and pass sentence upon yourselves. Do you not love pleasure more than you love God or your fellow men? There is work to be done. There are souls to save. There are battles to fight. There is a heaven to win. The mind, with all its capabilities, must be strengthened and stored with the treasures of divine wisdom. In the strength of God, the youth may do noble work for the Master. In this busy world, there is work enough for willing hands and brains. If our own affairs do not demand all our time, there are many in God's great family, many who need sympathy and aid. There are the sick to be visited, the poor to be helped, the ignorant to be instructed, and the fallen to be uplifted and encouraged. None are excused from effort. No one, whether rich or poor, can glorify God by a life of indolence. A person may as well expect to reap a harvest where he has not sown, as to expect salvation as the outcome of such a life. Even the beasts of burden put to shame the do-nothing, who, although he is endowed with reason and a knowledge of the divine will, refuses to take his part in the world's work. The race is not always to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, and those who are diligent in business may not always be prospered, but it is the hand of the diligent that maketh rich. And while idleness and drowsiness grieve the Holy Spirit and destroy true godliness, they also tend to poverty and want. He shall become poor that dealeth with a slack hand. Proverbs 10, verse 4. A life of useful labor is indispensable to man's physical, mental, and moral well-being. The sentence that he must toil for his daily bread and the promise of future happiness and glory both come from the same throne, and both are blessings. The true glory and joy of life are found only by the working men and women. Those who are always busy and who go cheerfully about their daily tasks are the useful members of society. In the faithful discharge of the various duties that lie in the pathway, they make their lives a blessing to themselves and others. Diligent labor keeps them from many of the snares of Satan, who finds some mischief still for idle hands to do. Idleness is one of the greatest of curses, for vice and crime, as well as poverty, follow in its wake. A stagnant pool becomes offensive. A pure, flowing brook spreads health and gladness over the land. The one is a symbol of the idler, the other of the industrious man. Labor brings its own reward in its effects on the physical system. Rest is sweet that is purchased by well-regulated industry, and healthful weariness ensures the benefits of refreshing sleep. The workers are the most happy and enjoy the best health. But there is a kind of toil which exhausts mind and body and is utterly unsatisfying. It is that which is done for the gratification of unsanctified ambition. The love of possession or pride of appearance leads thousands to carry to excess that which in itself is lawful, to devote all the strength of mind and body to that which should occupy but a small portion of their time. They bend every energy to the acquisition of wealth or honor, making all other objects secondary. They toil unflinchingly for years to accomplish their purpose. Yet when the goal is reached and the coveted reward secured, it turns to ashes in their grasp. It is a shadow. They have given their life for that which profiteth not. Yet all the lawful pursuits of life may be safely followed if the spirit is kept free from selfish hopes and the contamination of deceit and envy. The industrial and business life of the Christian should be marked with the same pure principles that held sway in the workshop of the Holy Nazarene. He did not employ his divine power to lessen his burdens, but toiled daily with patient hands. By occupying a humble position, Christ dignified the menial employments of life. Honest industry has received the sanction of heaven. But the essential lesson of contented industry in the necessary duties of daily life is yet to be learned by the greater portion of Christ's followers. Those who divide religion from their business are reproved by the example of Jesus. And besides, when he chooses his co-laborers in the work of salvation, he selected sturdy toilers from among the fishermen of Galilee and the tent makers of Corinth. From these humble men went forth a power that will be felt through all eternity. It is the working men and women, those who are willing to bear responsibilities with faith and hope, who find that which is great and good in life.
The angels are workers. They are ministers of God to the children of men. Those slothful servants who look forward to a heaven of inaction have false ideas of what constitutes heaven. The Creator has prepared no place for the gratification of indolence. Heaven is a place of interested activity. Yet to the weary and heavy laden, those who have fought the good fight of faith, it will be a glorious rest. For the youth and vigor of immortality will be theirs, and they will no longer have to contend against sin and Satan. To these energetic workers, a state of eternal indolence would be irksome. It would be no heaven to them. The path of toil appointed to the Christian on earth may be hard and wearisome, but it is honored by the footprints of the Redeemer, and he is safe who follows in that sacred way. Exercise conducive to health. The do-nothing system is a dangerous one in any case. The idea that those who have overtaxed their mental or physical powers, or who have broken down in body or mind, must suspend activity in order to regain health is a great error. In a few cases, entire rest for a time may be necessary, but such instances are rare. In most cases, the change would be too great to be beneficial. Those who have broken down by intense mental labor should have rest from wearing thought. Yet to teach them that it is wrong, or even dangerous, for them to exercise their mental powers at all leads them to think their condition worse than it really is. They are nervous and are in danger of becoming a burden to themselves as well as to those who care for them. In this state of mind, their recovery is doubtful indeed. Those who have overtaxed their physical powers should not be advised to forego labor entirely. To shut them away from all exercise would in many cases prevent their restoration to health. The will goes with the labor of the hands, and when the willpower is dormant, the imagination becomes abnormal, so that it is impossible for the sufferer to resist disease. Inactivity is the greatest curse that could come upon one in such a condition. In the case of the invalid, physical exercise in the direction of useful labor has a happy influence upon the mind. It strengthens the muscles, improves the circulation, and gives him the satisfaction of knowing that he is not wholly useless in this busy world. But if he has nothing to occupy his time and attention, his thoughts will be centered upon himself, and he will be in constant danger of exaggerating his difficulties. If invalids would engage in some well-directed physical exercise, using their strength, but not abusing it, they would find it an effective agent in their recovery. In the case of many whose minds and imaginations are diseased, such exertion is indispensable to health. They may be able to do but little at first, but they will soon find their strength increasing, and they can increase the task they set themselves accordingly. Physicians often advise invalids to take an ocean voyage, to go to some mineral spring, or to visit foreign countries in order to regain health. When in 9 cases out of 10, if they would eat temperately and take cheerful, healthful exercise, they would become well and would save time and money. Exercise aids the dyspeptic by giving the digestive organs a healthy tone. To engage in deep study or violent exercise immediately after eating hinders the digestive process, for the vital force, which is needed to carry on the work of digestion, is called away to other parts. But a short walk after a meal, with the head erect and the shoulders back, exercising moderately, is a great benefit. The mind is diverted from self to the beauties of nature. The less the attention is called to the stomach, the better. If you are in constant fear that your food will hurt you, it most assuredly will. Forget your troubles. Think of something cheerful. More people die for want of exercise than from overwork. Very many more rust out than wear out. Exercise quickens and equalizes the circulation. In idleness, the blood does not circulate freely, and the changes in the vital fluid, so necessary to health and life, do not take place. The little mouths in the skin, through which the body breathes, become clogged, thus making it impossible to eliminate impurities through that channel. This throws a double burden upon the other excretory organs, and disease is soon produced. Those who accustom themselves to working in the open air generally have a vigorous circulation. Men or women, young or old, who desire health and would enjoy life should remember that they cannot have these blessings without a good circulation. Whatever their business or inclinations, they should feel it a religious duty to take as much exercise in the open air as possible.
Many have suffered from severe mental taxation, unrelieved by physical exercise. Ministers, teachers, students, and other brain workers do not become as intelligent as they should in regard to the necessity of physical exercise in the open air. They neglect this duty, a duty which is most essential to the preservation of health, and while closely applying their minds to study, they eat enough for a laboring man. The result is a deterioration of their powers, and they are inclined to shun responsibilities. This is not true simply of the aged. Men young in years have fallen into the same state. Some grow corpulent because the system is clogged. Others become thin and feeble because their vital powers are exhausted in throwing off the excess of food. The liver is burdened in its efforts to throw off the impurities of the blood, and sickness is the result. When the mind is continually taxed with study, and the body is allowed to be inactive, the nerves of emotion are excited, while those of motion are not called into exercise. The mental organs are enfeebled through overwork, and the muscles through lack of employment. There is no inclination to exercise. Exertion seems to be irksome. What these persons need is a more active life. Physical exercise, a diversion from mental effort, would draw the blood from the brain. Strictly temperate habits, combined with proper exercise, would preserve both mental and physical vigor
and give power of endurance to all brain workers. Those whose habits are sedentary should, when the weather will permit, walk out in the open air every day, summer and winter. The clothing should be suitable and the feet well protected. Walking is often more beneficial to health than all the medicine that can be prescribed. For those who can endure it, walking is preferable to riding, for it brings more of the muscles into exercise. The lungs also are forced into healthy action, since it is impossible to walk briskly without inflating them. Importance of pure air. Pure, fresh air is one of heaven's precious boons. Its influence tends to invigorate the system and soothe the nerves. It purifies the blood and promotes a good circulation. It gives a healthful stimulus to the appetite and renders the digestion more perfect, and it induces sound, refreshing sleep. The pure, sweet air does its part toward making the body strong and healthy, and its influence is no less decidedly beneficial upon the mind, imparting to it tone and clearness, as well as a degree of composure and serenity. Living in close, ill-ventilated rooms, where the air is dead and vitiated, weakens the entire system. The skin becomes sallow, the mind clouded and gloomy. The blood moves sluggishly, digestion is retarded, and the whole system, enervated, languid, and dormant, becomes peculiarly sensitive to disease. Some invalids refuse to be convinced of the great importance of having a constant supply of pure air. For fear of taking cold, they willfully persist in living from year to year in an atmosphere almost destitute of vitality. It is impossible for such persons to have a healthy circulation. The skin is debilitated, and they become sensitive to any change in the atmosphere. The first suggestion of cold brings out additional clothing, and the heat of the room is increased. The next day they require a little more heat and a little more clothing in order to feel perfectly warm, and thus they humor every changing feeling until they have but little vitality left. If those who can would engage in some active employment instead of adding to their clothing or raising the temperature of an already overheated room, they would generally forget their chilly sensations and would receive no harm. For feeble lungs, an overheated atmosphere is very injurious. Winter is a season to be dreaded by those who are obliged to be with these invalids. It is not only winter out of doors, but dreary indoors. Under the plea that the air affects the lungs and head, these victims of a diseased imagination shut themselves up in the house and close the windows. They expect to take cold from the least exposure, and they do. Have we not proved it? They will argue, and no amount of reasoning will make them believe that they do not understand the philosophy of the whole matter. It is true that they do take cold when exposed, but it is because their course has made them as tender as babies, and they cannot endure anything. Yet they live on with windows and doors closed, hovering over the stove and enjoying their misery. Why will not these persons try the effect of judicious outdoor exercise?
Many have been taught that night air is positively injurious to health and therefore must be excluded from their rooms. One autumn evening, I was traveling in a crowded railway carriage. The exhalations from so many lungs and bodies rendered the atmosphere very impure and gave me a sickening sensation. I raised my window and was enjoying the fresh air when a lady, in earnest, imploring tones, cried out, "Do put down that window! You will take cold and be sick! The night air is so unhealthful!" I replied, "Madam, we have no other air than night air, in this carriage or out of it. If you refuse to breathe the night air, you must stop breathing. In the cool of the evening, it may be necessary to guard against chilliness by extra clothing, and one should be careful not to sit in a draft or in a cold room when weary or when in a perspiration.
but all should so accustom themselves to fresh, pure air that they will not be affected by slight changes of temperature. There should be a free circulation of pure air through the room during sleeping hours and at all other times. The free air of heaven, by day or night, is one of the richest blessings we can enjoy. Many labor under the mistaken idea that if they have taken cold, they must carefully exclude the outside air and increase the temperature of the room until it is excessively hot. But the system of one suffering with cold is deranged. The pores are closed by waste matter, and there is more or less inflammation of the internal organs because the blood has been chilled back from the surface and thrown upon them. At this time, of all others, the lungs should not be deprived of pure air. Judicious exercise would induce the blood to the surface and thus relieve the internal organs. The power of the will is a great help in resisting cold and giving energy to the nervous system. To deprive the lungs of air is like depriving the stomach of food. Air is the food that God has provided for the lungs, but it must be kept in circulation to be pure. Let it freely enter your homes, welcome it, cultivate a love for it as a precious boon of heaven, and it will bring healing and blessing. Cleanliness and order. Incorrect personal habits are among the most prolific causes of disease. Order and cleanliness are laws of heaven. The directions given to Moses when the Lord was about to declare his law upon Mount Sinai were very strict in this respect. And the Lord said unto Moses, Go unto the people, and sanctify them today and tomorrow, and let them wash their clothes. Exodus 19, verse 10. They were directed to do this, lest there should be impurity about them as they should come before God. He is a God of order, and He requires order and cleanliness in His people. On no occasion were the children of Israel to allow impurities to remain upon their clothing or their persons. Those who had any uncleanness were to be shut out of the camp until the evening, and then were required to cleanse themselves and their clothing before they could return. They were also commanded to carry all their refuse to a distance from the camp. This was a sanitary measure as well as a religious regulation. The Lord requires no less of His people now than He did anciently. If cleanliness was so necessary to those journeying in the wilderness, who were in the open air nearly all the time, it is not less necessary to us, who live in close houses where impurities are more observable and have a more unhealthful influence. The moral law, spoken from Sinai, cannot live in the hearts of persons of disorderly, filthy habits. If the children of Israel could not so much as listen to the proclamation of that holy law without cleanliness of person and clothing, how can its pure precepts be written upon the hearts of those who are untidy in their persons and their homes? A neglect of cleanliness will induce disease. Sickness does not come without a cause. Violent epidemics of fever have occurred in villages and cities that were considered perfectly healthful, and these have resulted in death or broken constitutions. In many instances, the premises of the very ones who fell victims to these epidemics contained the agents of destruction, which sent forth deadly poison into the atmosphere to be inhaled by the family and the neighborhood. It is astonishing to witness the prevailing ignorance relative to the effects which slackness and recklessness produce upon health. When Lord Palmerston was Premier of England, he was at one time petitioned by the Scottish clergy to appoint a day of fasting and prayer to avert the cholera. He replied, "Cleanse and disinfect your streets and houses, promote cleanliness and health among the poor, and see that they are plentifully supplied with good food and raiment, and employ right sanitarium measures generally, and you will have no occasion to fast and pray. Nor will the Lord hear your prayers while these, his preventives, remain unheeded.
Upon rising in the morning, most persons would be benefited by taking a sponge or hand bath. This will remove impurities from the skin and keep it moist and supple, thereby aiding the circulation. Persons in health should on no account neglect frequent bathing. Whether a person is sick or well, respiration is rendered more free and full by bathing. The mind and body are alike invigorated. The muscles become more flexible. Every faculty of the intellect is made brighter. The bath is a soother of the nerves. Instead of increasing the liability of taking cold, it fortifies against cold because it improves the circulation. The blood is brought to the surface, and a more easy and regular flow of the vital fluid is obtained. It is not God who has brought upon us the many woes which mortals now inherit. Our own folly has led us to deprive ourselves of things that are precious, of the blessings which, if properly used, are of inestimable value in the maintenance of health. Exercise, sunlight, and air are the blessings which heaven has provided to make the sick well and to keep in health those who are not sick. God deprives no one of their benefits, but the people close their doors against these things which are among nature's most healing agents. Many houses are furnished expensively, more to gratify pride than for the comfort, convenience, or health of the family. The best rooms are kept closed and dark, lest the light injure the rich furniture, or fade the carpets, or tarnish the picture frames. When visitors are permitted to be seated in these spare rooms, they are in danger of taking cold because of the damp atmosphere pervading them. Spare bedrooms are kept closed for the same reasons. Sleeping rooms should be large and so arranged as to have a free circulation of air day and night. Those who have slept in an ill-ventilated room awake feeling feverish and exhausted. This is because the vitalizing air was excluded, and the whole system suffers in consequence. Whoever occupies beds which have not been freely exposed to the air and sunlight does so at the risk of health, and often, even, of life itself. There should be a circulation of air and an abundance of light in every apartment of the house for several hours each day. If you would have your homes sweet and inviting, the abodes of health and happiness, make them bright with air and sunshine. Remove the heavy curtains, open the windows, throw back the blinds, and enjoy the pure air and the rich sunlight. It may fade your carpets, but it will give a healthy color to the cheeks of your children. A humble home, made bright with air and sunlight, and cheerful with earnest, loving hearts and the presence of God, will be a heaven below for your family and for all who may share your generous hospitality. A yard adorned with flowers and some trees and shrubbery at a proper distance from the house has a happy influence upon the family, promoting health and cheerfulness. God is a lover of the beautiful. He has given us unmistakable evidence of this in the work of his hands. He who made the Eden home for our first parents so beautiful has surrounded us with the lovely things of nature for our happiness. He has implanted in our hearts a love of the beautiful, and he has caused the noble trees to grow and has set the flowers in the field like gems to beautify the earth, that through these tokens of his love, we may have correct views of his character. The charms of nature are restful to eye and mind. But with the fragrance of flowers in the garden, the God-given air and sunlight should be granted free ingress into our homes. Shade trees and shrubbery, if sufficiently scattered and properly taken care of, will prove no injury to the health. But the great quantities of fallen leaves, if not immediately removed, decay and poison the atmosphere.
and if the trees and shrubs are close and dense around a house, they make it unhealthful, for they prevent the free circulation of air and shut out the rays of the sun. In consequence, a dampness gathers in the house, especially in wet seasons, and those who occupy the sleeping rooms are liable to be troubled with rheumatism, neuralgia, and lung complaints. Dwellings should, if possible, be built on high ground. If a house is built where the water will settle around it, remaining for a time and slowly drying away, there is a poisonous miasma continually rising from the damp ground, which breeds sore throats, fevers, ague, or lung diseases.
Many expect that God will keep them from sickness merely because they ask Him to do so. But the prayers of those who do not regard the laws of life, God cannot answer, because their faith is not made perfect by works. When we do all we can on our part to ensure health, then we may expect that good results will follow, and we can ask in faith that God will bless our efforts. And He will answer our prayer, if His name can be glorified thereby. But let all understand that they have something to do. God will not work in a miraculous manner to preserve the health of persons who are, by their careless inattention to the laws of health, taking a sure course to make themselves sick. Recreation. Many labor too hard without allowing themselves change or periods of rest. Recreation is needful to those who engage in physical labor, and is still more essential for those whose work is principally mental. It is not essential to our salvation, nor for the glory of God, to keep the mind laboring constantly and excessively, even upon religious themes. There are amusements such as card playing, dancing, theater going, etc., which we cannot approve, because heaven condemns them. They open the door to great evils. By their exciting tendency, they produce in some minds a passion for gambling and dissipation. All such amusements should be condemned by Christians, and something perfectly harmless should be substituted in their place. There are modes of recreation which are highly beneficial to both mind and body. An enlightened, discriminating mind will find abundant means for entertainment and diversion from sources not only innocent but instructive. Recreation in the open air and the contemplation of the works of God in nature will be of the highest benefit. The master artist has painted upon heaven's shifting, changing canvas the glories of the setting sun. He has tinted and gilded the heavens with gold, silver, and crimson, as if the portals of high heaven were thrown open that we might view its gleamings, and our imagination take hold of the glory within. Shall we turn carelessly from this heaven-wrought picture? Shall we fail to trace the hand of God in His works? God has surrounded us with His perfect work in field and forest, hill and valley, plain and river, to attract and interest the mind. And if we faithfully study Him in the book of nature, we shall find it full of His infinite love and power.